We're going to take a short break and go right now and move on to my next guest, who comes looking from this from sort of another president's point of view, or lots of other presidents' point of view, because, as you know, healthcare is not a new topic. It's been talked about for many, many years. Let me introduce that. If you think Richard Nixon didn't care about or, you know, didn't know anything about diseases, well, you probably didn't know that he had tuberculosis that ran in his family. And that's one of the reasons why he was very interested in tuberculosis. And my next guest describes in his new book the disease that killed two of Nixon's brothers. It split his family apart, left the Nixon family destitute, influenced Nixon for the rest of his life. Other presidents had involvement in health care also. Stroke. Think of stroke. I don't think of John F. Kennedy talking about stroke, but stroke is something that got into the Kennedy family. John Kennedy's dad suffered from stroke, and that spurred JFK to fight for Medicare for seniors, my next guest says. And like all of us, presidents get sick, their family members get sick. So how do we know about how these presidents and their encounters with ill people shape the policies that come out of their offices? Certainly we hear politicians all the time saying, you know, I'm interested in this because it happened in my family. Well, it happened in lots of families, to lots of families of past presidents. And James Marone is co-author with David Blumenthal of The Heart of Power, Health and Politics in the Oval Office. He's also professor and chair of political science at Brown University. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Ira. Great to be
here. I was a little bit rambling, but I got to it's a lot to talk about.
It's a big story, but it's got a simple idea behind it. And that's first that health policies really take presidential leadership if anything's going to happen. But more important for us, that this is one area where the president's humanity really shines out. Presidents don't feel hunger or homelessness. They don't go on welfare as a general rule. They don't go to jail. So all those kinds of policy areas are kind of distant and maybe cerebral to the lives of the presidents. Mm-hmm. But they all get sick, and they all have families that get sick. Mm-hmm. So what we really wanted to find out was the illness that runs in the families and through the White House. How does that affect the way presidents make health policies? Mm-hmm. You know, this is a group of very sick guys. Yeah. We had 15 presidents die in the 20th century. 11 of them died prematurely, significantly before the rest of their generation. So here's an area where presidents really experience the kinds of problems that their policies are designed to solve.
Let me remind everybody that this is Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow, talking with James Marone, who is co-author with David Blumenthal of The Heart of Power, Health and Politics in the Oval Office. And what's interesting is that we really never realized the influence of Republican presidents on health care. We always think about, you know, health care as being a Democratic issue, but you write in your book about the presidents who really were most involved in Republicans.
Yes, it's frustrating for Democrats writing books. My co-author is here in the Obama administration. But again and again, we found that Republicans were very effective. And in effect, Nixon went to China. So, yes, the great health reform victory is Lyndon Johnson, and maybe we'll mm-hmm. get a chance to talk about that in the passage of Medicare and Medicaid. He was extraordinary. But you put Lyndon Johnson aside, and what you have are a series of pretty remarkable events around Republicans. You mentioned Richard Nixon. His childhood was fraught by, as you said, tuberculosis. Mm-hmm. His younger brother died, and then his older brother, the family favorite, came down with TB. His mother left. She went to Arizona, started caring for other boys with TB so she could afford the rent. So Richard is left with his abusive father, no mother, and the mother doesn't come home until the second brother has died as well. Richard Nixon's career, very strange political career, he flashes on the scene as a great red-baiter, a meat-eating conservative. But even in those early days as a congressman, he was very liberal on health care. And from the White House tapes, the infamous White House tapes, we now have really quite sad stories of him talking to people. And again, when it came to health care, he'd say, oh, I know about this. Mm-hmm. And then he'd go on the long, rambling story that really touched his soul. And the result is we came very close to national health insurance. Kennedy, the great Ted Kennedy, the great congressman from Arkansas, Wilbur Mills, the great health reformer, and Nixon almost pulled off the national health insurance that is still the model for national health insurance today. Again, Ronald Reagan, of all people, Ronald Reagan, government is the problem, Ronald Reagan, he really believed in catastrophic health insurance for Medicare. The entire cabinet was against it. All his advisors were against it. But Reagan pushed it through. It really touched something in him. And one final example of Republicans who were successful in pushing health reform, and that's George Bush. Bush, we know we've talked to a lot of people in the Bush White House, and the picture that emerges of Bush is not the usual picture we get on most other policy areas. He was very focused on getting the prescription drug reform.
All right, hang on to that thought. We have to take a break. We'll come back and finish that thought about how George Bush was getting the drug reform. So stay with us. We'll be right back and talk more with James Marone on Science Friday. Stay with us. You're listening to Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow, talking with James Marone, who is co-author with David Blumenthal, of the new book, The Heart of Power, Health and Politics in the Oval Office. Our number 1-800-989-8255. If you want to tweet us, we have a Twitter account, at SciFry, that's at SCIFRI. When I rudely interrupted James Marone, he was talking about how President Bush had reformed drug policy in the United States.
It came out of his gut because he had a sister, Robin, mm-hmm. who died of leukemia. It was a real tragedy and a real trauma for the entire Bush family. They were left with all boys. His mom and dad used to say, we need someone who doesn't like frogs. We need a girl in this family, but they didn't have one. And that seems to have focused George W. Bush on getting some health reform. Now, he had much bigger visions. He wanted to turn it into a Republican competitive system, Medicare, that is, and failed to do that. But the image of him in the White House starting his meetings exactly on time and woe be the aide who arrives a second late, running the hour, reading the briefing books, ticking through it all, he was really focused mm-hmm. on that health reform.
Mm-hmm. Didn't Ronald Reagan, though, think Medicare was going to ruin us all at some point?
Oh, boy, he fought so hard against Medicare, talked about how someday we will tell our children and our children's children what it was like in America when men were free, if Medicare passed.
He called it the end of freedom. He did.
The end of freedom. Someday we will awake to find that we have socialism. That was he cut a record decrying Medicare in 1963. But that's what was so shocking, that when he actually came to office, he actually protected Medicare and tried to expand it against the advice of all his conservative conservative advisors. There's a famous cabinet meeting where everybody talked against it except for two cabinet members, and Reagan looks at them and says, "I see the only two cabinet members for this proposal are the only two who have ever been elected to office," and he went with expanding Medicare.
So let's talk about things that were successful and were not. Why was Lyndon Johnson so successful?
Lyndon Johnson was back up for a second. The most important thing, you can't duck health care.
Yeah.
You got to feel it in your gut that the whole point about all these medical injuries to family, really more than to the presidents themselves, is it commits them. This is a terribly difficult policy area. So the first lesson is that if you don't feel it in your gut, if you don't really care, mm-hmm. you're going to get creamed on this. Mm-hmm. Here's another lesson, and I'll get back to Lyndon Johnson in a second. But this movie has the same scene in it for every presidency. The president sits in his Oval Office, decides to go for health care. The economists troop in. They shake their heads, and they say, "Mr. President, we just can't afford it." Mm-hmm. If you listen to the economists, you'll find that you just can't afford it. You'll make so many compromises, the thing falls apart. Every successful president turns to them and says, "I hear you. Now be quiet. Get out of my office." You got to hush the economists. That should light up your phones.
Would you put President Obama in that Oval Office in that scene now?
Yes, I would. There's after former Senator Daschle, who was going to lead the health reform for Obama, was forced to withdraw his name. And there was a meeting at the White House that in which an awful lot of people said, OK, let's get out of health reform. We've lost our leader for it. The minority of advisors reportedly the economists were, let's get out of this health care thing while we can get out alive. And Obama overruled them with apparently a minority of the people in the room saying so. So, yes, I would. LBJ was the number one guy. We heard a tape that had only recently been released from Lyndon Johnson, in which he's instructing a newly elected senator from Massachusetts named Ted Kennedy how to get health care policies through Congress. And he says, now, the first thing you got to do, don't let them predict those costs. They want to predict the cost of Medicare 5 years out. He'd say predict the cost, not project. And that's killed me with Senator Long. He says it's going to cost $1 billion, and now he's against it. And, you know, this vibrant, big Lyndon Johnson, he just suppressed the cost figures. Here's something to ponder. If we had had accurate cost projections for Medicare, we never would have passed the program. And Johnson knew that.
Wow. Wow.
So that's – and in the current debate, somehow the debate has become about can we afford this. That – framing the debate that way – it's an important question, of course, but framing the debate that way will – has traditionally subverted reform of every kind. Can we afford it? Yes, we can afford it. But once you frame it as it's all about money, you're off on a bad foot.
Mm-hmm. So how should it be framed then, historically looking?
I talk to if you go, there's nothing to clear the head, Ira, like talking to a foreign audience. If you go around, say, to European audiences and you describe the American healthcare system, what puzzles them, after you're through the lecture, they sort of look at you with this incredulity. And they say, well, why don't you cover all your people? They don't get – and you just say, this is simple for you to ask. And then you go into the long lecture about all the reasons we don't. But the first thing to do is to think about coverage, because people are frightened. People know that their health insurance is not secure unless you're in a very lucky and very rare spot. And if you look around the world, Medicare is an example here, Medicaid is an example here and around the world as well. Generally, we've gotten the system into place first, then rationalized it, then worried about costs. Mm-hmm. And that's how the debate ought to proceed if it's going to be successful. That's been our own history as well.
What went wrong with Hillary Clinton's efforts? So
everything.
So terribly wrong.
Everything went wrong.
Was it from starting from the approach, from framing the debate about money instead of coverage, or what?
The first lesson is you've got to move very quickly while your own election is still warm in everybody's minds. The first mistake the Clintons made was to wait a full year before delivering their health plan to Congress. It didn't get before Congress till January, till year two in the congressional session. By then, by year two, people have forgotten your own election. That's no longer impressive. The new news is the midterm election, and everybody's angling around that. So that speed was one thing. Secondly, he split his base. Clinton first listened to the economists and tried to close the budget deficit and then pass NAFTA. When he got NAFTA with mainly Republican votes, liberals were completely dispirited. What's very important about health reform is that people are pushing hard. This is a difficult package. So that to have somebody like Dr. Relman on the radio saying, it's not enough, you got to do more, that's great. That's what you need, because there has to be a popular movement behind it. Third, you got to learn to work Congress, the world's most complicated machinery. Johnson knew it. The Clintons did not know how to work Congress. Fourth and last, learn how to lose. You're probably going to lose. I think the Clintons' biggest mistake was after the battle was over, Ira. Believe it or not, Bill was so articulate about the nature of the problem. Do you remember his speeches? He used to talk about how our children would someday look at us and say, how could it be in a rich society people could lose everything, their homes, their savings, just because someone got sick? That was a very moving speech. Then the thing begins to fall apart in Congress. At the end of the debate, What does Clinton say in his memoirs? I felt bad for Hillary. And secondly, I should have done welfare instead. What he left the opponents of health insurance to spin the result. And as a consequence, the issue, the Democrats' best issue by polling results, he let the issue slip away and he let the opponents create the narrative. Now everyone knows, and I mean this in quotes, everyone knows that the Clinton proposal was a disaster, would have been a mess, and Bob Dole and the Republicans saved us from Clinton. If you look at the memos the Republicans were writing each other at the time, however, the great fear was that this would pass and be a success, because almost every healthcare program we've passed has been a success. And as Bill Kristol wrote to the Republicans, this could reconnect the Democrats to the middle class. So should Obama lose, the number one lesson from history is that's the time to continue arguing that it would have been a great thing and not let the opponents spin the results.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you could come back again and try later in something like this?
The problem is so deep that there is no avoiding it. We spend an extra penny on every dollar on healthcare. We move a penny, an extra penny on every dollar, at one percentage of GDP, to healthcare every 3 to 4 years. We can't continue doing that. People's health is insecure. Health insurance is insecure. You go to the doctor, they call the insurance company. The insurance company says no. As long as we have these pressures, the problem will come back over and over again.
So if you're in the same room with the president, with President Obama, and you're advising him, and he's got the trouble with Congress, and they're talking about all these different kinds of options of paying for it and all kinds of things, what do you tell him that you've learned from history?
I tell him, one, go public. You need a movement. If you don't have people very excited, very aroused, flooding Congress with tweets, it's not going to happen. Second, at the same time you're going public, work the Congress. You have a majority, and you've got a huge advantage, which is you now have – the Democrats have had all three houses, the House, Senate, and White House, for 2 years, 2 years since 1980. And this time, they're motivated. You've got to work them hard. So you've got to play the inside game, and you have to play the outside game. And finally, yes, costs are very important, but that's not what's going to win this package. What's going to win a package and major health reform is people's own insecurity about health care, and that's the way you have to sell it. And something he's doing right, move very quickly. There's a footnote to all this about the complexity of Congress, and that's worth just taking a moment to talk about. Normally, it takes 60 votes to get things through the Senate. Very quietly, in budget reconciliation, that is, in creating the budget package, the Congress agreed, being pushed by Obama, that they would consider this a budget bill. What does this mean? A budget bill cannot be amended from the House and from the Senate floor, and it can't be filibustered. So they only need, by the rules they've established, 50 votes in the Senate. Obama faces a choice, as do the Senate leaders. They can try bipartisan, but if they can't get bipartisan, they can get away with 50 votes, and 50 votes they can get. So my strongest advice to Obama is bipartisanship is great, but get the best program you can. Mm-hmm. Don't dither away this program in trying to get three Republicans or three opponents. Go to the people, make it the best, the strongest program you can. Don't compromise too much here. You got the votes.
Talking with James Marone, co-author with David Blumenthal of The Heart of Power, Health and Politics in the Oval Office on Science Friday from NPR News. I want to thank you for taking time to be with us today. I guess your message is to the president, be a little more Lyndon Johnson.
Be bold.
Be bold. Thank you very much for taking time to be with us. And we'll be watching as this very important issue continues working its way through Capitol Hill.
Thanks, Ira. It was a pleasure.
You're welcome. Good luck with the book.